This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The August primary and the November general elections will be decided by a number of factors. That includes how much money is raised and spent by the campaigns. The Michigan Campaign Finance Network has been reviewing the latest reports on contributions and expenditures. Craig Mauger is executive director of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network, and he joins us from Lansing. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Gordon, for having me on.
So I've looked at some things here, and there's some things that stand out to me, but clearly you're the expert, and you look at a lot more of these reports than I do. Are there some things that stand out to you in terms of what you see when you examine how candidates are raising and spending money?
Yeah, I mean, specifically, I looked most closely recently at the state house races happening across Michigan. Candidates who are going to be on the primary ballot running for the state house had to turn in reports just last week on Friday. And I did some looking at all the reports and competitive races. And something that just jumped out at me is that in places, districts where there are competitive primary races, we're seeing a lot of money flow to districts that have candidates, at least one, who have some type of tie to Lansing. As it's stated over and over again, raising money in Michigan for state offices, the money is in Lansing, where all the interest groups are based, where the people who run campaigns and do the consultant work are based, and that's where you can really raise a lot of money. We ranked all the House districts across the state in terms of how much money was flowing to those districts. The number one district was the 103rd, which is a northern Michigan district, where the wife of the current state representative is running and raising lots of money from Lansing-based PACs. And then the second most expensive state house race so far was the 64th, which is in the Jackson area. And the guy drawing a lot of money there is an ex-lobbyist who was a lobbyist for many years for the American Petroleum Institute. And he's raising a lot of money from different oil and gas interests and other lobbying firms that have PACs to give to candidates.
So would you say in most of the cases when you look at state house fundraising, the money, in addition to the ties to Lansing, is there also an incentive to give when it's believed that you can tip the balance there and influence the race? In other words, that you can help, you can help a candidate win.
Money flows in the primary season, which we're in currently. Money flows to seats that are open and competitive. Sometimes they can be open or competitive. Interest groups want to help out in races where they can influence the outcome and get a candidate who is more more willing to work with them than maybe his opponent in the primary. As people know across this state, there aren't a lot of districts, state house districts in Michigan, that are going to be competitive in November. I mean, you're talking about maybe 15. That's the number that I throw out. There might be 15 districts that could be potentially competitive in November between Democrats and Republicans. Our districts are drawn in such a way, and people in Michigan live in such a way that a lot of these districts are Republican districts or Democratic districts. So what that sets up is that this August 2nd primary election is going to decide a lot of these seats across the state. And in that, these interest groups know that, and they play in these races to try to get the Republican, if it's a Republican seat, that's more willing to go with their desires, or a Democrat that's more willing to go with their desires. And then on top of that, there are some groups that just give to everybody. They just want to, if they think someone's going to win, they'll give to that person. And we see that too.
They want to make sure that they have ingratiated themselves to whomever the representative is for that district.
Yeah, that's what we see. I mean, we put out a report recently that Consumers Energy and DTE are kind of two examples of that. The major energy utilities in our state, they've given to everyone serving in the legislature except four members. So, I mean, they give to just about everybody.
Looking at congressional races, there has been a lot of money raised in the 6th District here in Southwest Michigan. Republican Fred Upton's running for re-election, and he is facing Democrat Paul Clements, who he beat 2 years ago. So what do we see when we look at the sheer volume of money coming into this part of Michigan?
Yeah, the last reports that were due for people running for Congress, Paul Clements from Kalamazoo and Fred Upton from St. Joe, they had combined to raise, I think, $500,000 in just that approximately three-month period alone. So that's $500,000 that those two candidates were able to raise. And it's really in some ways, it's kind of a fringe district. It's not a district that's 50-50. There aren't 50% Republicans and 50% Democrats living in that district. And there tend to be more Republicans. It's a much more GOP-friendly district right now that might be changing into the future. But it shows definitely that Democrats are casting a wide net in districts that they're looking at competing in as of right now. And it shows that Fred Upton is just continuing to run like he's in competitive races. He continues to raise money like he's defending that seat against a tough challenge every cycle in and out. And he raises a lot of money from political action committees that work in Washington. And he's been in Washington for a while. And he's a good fundraiser, as these reports show.
And then the 7th district, which is right next door to the 6th, Tim Walberg is running for re-election there. And both Tim Walberg and his opponent, Gretchen Driscoll, they've also been bringing in a lot of money. So we are seeing the congressional money go to places where it would seem that both sides are being able to convince people that this is a race that you want to invest in.
Yeah, and we'll see that. That's one of the fascinating things about all of this is that we will see that change as November comes closer and closer. Money will start flowing at a much higher level to some districts, and it will start, the spigot will start to turn off to some of the other districts as either the Democrats or the Republicans decide that this isn't a place we're going to play. That 7th district, the Driscoll versus Walberg seat, is widely considered to be the race, the congressional race, that's going to be the most competitive in Michigan. The people that I talk to that are consultants and follow these things, they think at the end of the day, that's going to be the one where Democrats and Republicans are really going to be fighting it out, where they're going to be TV ads, where Driscoll is going to keep her challenge close up until November. So that's definitely one to watch for people in Michigan who are interested in politics.
So back in June, you issued a report with this title, which I have to say is very apt. With questionable results, ballot campaigns have spent $3.5 million. And I'm sure by now the total must be much more than that. And of course, the interesting thing, why you say questionable results in that headline, is because it appears we are going to go into the voting booth in November and not have any ballot questions to settle statewide, which is interesting because we've had a lot of them in recent history in Michigan elections. What happened this time around?
Yeah, I mean, what happened is that we had a lot of groups spending money, a lot of groups that wanted to get something on the ballot and put it before voters to see if they could circumvent the legislature or the governor in some instances. And none of them were able to pull it off. And I think it shows a couple of things. Ballot campaigns are supposed to be this way for citizens to put legislation in place, to make a change if the legislature isn't open to that change, but the citizens are. This is a way for them to do this. It's supposed to be kind of like a grassroots initiative to make a legal change. But we're seeing over and over again that this is an extremely costly, extremely difficult challenge to navigate in terms of taking up a petition, getting the needed signatures, and then getting a proposal on the ballot. And it also shows, this year shows, that even if you spend a lot of money, it doesn't guarantee success. There's this constantly this idea floated in Lansing that if you spend $1 million on gathering petition signatures, you'll get enough signatures statewide to get your proposal at least on the ballot, and then raising money to fight for the vote to get enough votes for your proposal is a totally different thing. But just getting that $1 million to put the signatures on the ballot, it was thought to be the initial challenge. This time around, we had a group that wanted to repeal Michigan's prevailing wage, and they raised $2.6 million and spent at least $1.65 million, and they still could not get their proposal before voters. They had a problem with the signature gathering. They had a lot of flaws, with a lot of problems with the company they hired to gather signatures, and it led to a lawsuit. And that proposal, which everyone thought was guaranteed to get on the ballot this year, is not on the ballot, and it's in court. There's now a court case about it. So it's an example that money does not guarantee success on these ballot campaigns because the threshold of getting success is so high.
And there was also the question of legalizing marijuana. That was another pretty well-financed campaign, correct?
Yes, definitely. I mean, it wasn't financed to probably the level that it needed to be, but it's still an example that one of the main groups pursuing this, MI Legalized, they were able to raise almost $1 million as of the time I wrote this report. And they were not even able to get the signatures that were needed. And they had a huge grassroots base of support. Lots of people are passionate about marijuana legalization in Michigan. A lot of people are willing to sacrifice time to go out and gather signatures for that issue. There aren't a lot of issues that are like that. There are some, but not a lot. And even with almost $1 million, and even with this dedicated base of people willing to gather signatures, they were not able, as it stands today, to get their proposal approved for the ballot in November.
So I guess a question this might lead to, Craig, is might future ballot campaigns run into some skepticism from donors who say, you know, geez, these groups had a lot of money, and yet they were still not able to get on the ballot. Do I want to see my big contribution go to this issue that I may care a lot about when maybe I could spend it on candidates who I want to try and get elected or other ways that I might want to spend that money rather than trying to support a ballot issue?
Yeah, I think I think currently they run into skepticism. There's tons of skepticism. Donors want to see polling. They want to see a path to success that isn't going to cost some exorbitant amount and take up all the money they have to do in political giving. But even more so, I think this year is going to spur donors to further say, show me the guarantee that this thing's going to get on the ballot. Show me that you have experience in a successful proposal. Show me that in November, when voters are seeing advertisements for and against this proposal, that there is a path toward support. Toward getting the 50%, 51% support that you need to approve one of these. I think it's a cautionary tale for a lot of donors this year, what happened with these proposals.
And Craig, I have to ask you, as someone who keeps their eye on money in politics and warns us about maybe the influence that money has on politics, you know, what are your feelings when you see that someone can spend a lot of money and then at the end of the day not get the desired outcome, not even get it before voters? I guess, does it show flaws in the system, or does it show that the system has some safeguards that do put some brakes on people buying too much influence?
Yeah, I think we have to separate out ballot campaigns from legislative influence. You know, in many ways, the ballot campaigns are supposed to be transparent. I mean, basically, interest groups have to, in general, say, this is the proposal that I want, and I'm the person funding it. And it's a very, usually, there are times when groups try to funnel money through different means, but usually we have an idea about who wants to get the change in place and who's paying the money to get the change in place. So that's ballot campaigns. When it comes to funding legislative candidates, I think it's a totally different different idea. Because oftentimes we don't know who the person is desiring the change, how much money total they're giving to the people voting on the change. And it's a very kind of smoke and mirrors, and it's all, you know, very difficult to track oftentimes. That's why an organization like ours exists, because there's a need to try to shine a light on these things. So I just think drawing a line between the ballot campaigns and what's happening in the legislative branch is just important on that question you asked.
Craig Mauger, as always, thank you very much for your time.
Gordon, thank you so much for having me.
Craig Mauger is Executive Director of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. He joined us from Lansing. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.